And before I get started, I'm going to do the set aside prayer, my version of it. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Help me carry your message tonight. Amen. Amen. Okay, now this is the second week of the second step proposition exercise on fear. We're in the part of the book on Wednesday night where we're doing inventory, step four, and we read the fear instructions on page 67, 68. There are several podcasts on that on the site. The one from a few weeks ago is up if you want to see the directions in the big book. This is called the second step proposition because I believe on page 53, it says, when I became an alcoholic, crushed by a self-imposed crisis I could not postpone or evade, I had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or nothing. What is my choice to be? And so this is the choice of whether God is everything or nothing in my life. And it's the second step proposition exercise on fear, because whenever I'm afraid, I am running the show. If I have any kind of fear, I'm running that area of my life, that person, that thing, whatever that expectation is. And I always have fear when I'm relying on self instead of God. The fear, dealing with fear is very simple. It goes from God, self-reliance to God-reliance. Trusting in God versus trusting in me. Now, that sounds good. Anybody think it's good?
Yeah.
It's hard to do. That's why we have this exercise. It helps you, gives you certain tools on how you do this. We covered the first page, but I just want to go and cover again the bottom of this page. And what he's talking about here, this is an exercise. I got it from Fellowship of the Spirit by Dave Fredrickson in 2001. I could print out the whole, it was a 12 session weekend study. I've printed it all out. This was part of that. And I've taught on this, I think, for the last 11 years. He's talking about the ego, and it rebuilds if it's left unchecked. Anybody believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It rebuilds quickly. It can be defeated at 8 in the morning, and it's roaring at 8:30. And he says where a typical alcoholic is a narcissistic, egocentric core. Now, that's really an X-rated statement. It means we are an extreme example of egotistical preoccupation with myself, my personal preferences, my aspirations, my needs, my success, and how I'm perceived by others. I'm obsessed with how I'm perceived. Now, I'm looking around. I know there's somebody in here that doesn't like me. Get over it. And it says narcissism is totally absorbed in self. An extreme narcissist, and the big book talks about this, is the center of my own universe. And when I'm in the center of my own universe, I'm not in the real world. Russ mentioned the world of the spirit. The world of the spirit is the real world. I lived in this world I created where I was the center of the universe. And guess what? It was not pretty. I got myself here. I decided I was the center of the universe. There's no one else to blame. Now, I want to live in the real world, the world with God. And so I have to learn tools so when I go back into my universe, I get out of it quickly and get back into God's universe. Step four is where we look at how we spend our whole life in our own universe. It's not pretty. It shouldn't be. Step 10 is where we've learned the tools in step four to get into the world of the spirit and then how we stay there. So step four and step 10 is a combination of step four through nine. And what we're learning here on fear is really important stuff. So he says the alcoholic has this narcissistic egocentric core. Anybody have that?
Yep.
We all have it. And guess what? It never goes completely away, but he's going to tell us how we put it into remission. We're intent on maintaining at all costs its inner integrity. This is what you hear people say, I don't want to hear about God. You ever hear that? Well, what they're saying is they want to keep their narcissistic, egocentric core, even though it's killing them. Now, they don't realize that, because we've lived our whole life that way. It says, inwardly the alcohol brooks no control for man or God. Anybody here ever get bothered by suggestions? People suggest things? Now I look forward to it, sometimes. But I look forward to it because I have to be willing to change my mind about things and let go of my old ideas. The alcoholic is and must be the master of his destiny, and I talked about the battleship and the lighthouse. We're the battleship that wants everything to move. And we see the lighthouse, and we want the lighthouse to move, and the lighthouse isn't moving. And we hit the lighthouse, and that was our whole life. If the alcoholic can truly, now here's the excellent point. This is why this is such a powerful exercise. We talk about step two a lot. But he's talking about step two. If you can truly accept the presence of a power greater than yourself, truly accept that God is everything and you're nothing, truly understand that, then just by that deep admission in your innermost core, you modify at least temporarily, possibly permanently, his deepest inner structure. And when you do so without any struggle or resentment, when you give in to that God is everything, then you're no longer typically alcoholic. So that's what's really required. The first step is what helps you realize that you need God as everything, and that you have to truly accept the presence of a power greater than yourself in your innermost core, and you want that power to be the director of your life. And and if you do so and you're not resentful or struggle, you want it, because why? You're powerless over alcohol, your life's unmanageable. And here's he says, the strange thing is if the alcoholic can sustain that inner feeling of acceptance of this power greater than yourself in your life, he will remain sober the rest of his life. So how do we maintain this acceptance continually of the presence greater than ourselves in our life? And that's what steps 4 through 9 and living 10, 11, and 12 are all about. And I wrote acceptance of the presence of a power greater than myself and surrendering to the, it's two parts. You have to accept the presence and then you have to surrender to it completely. Now this is an exercise about when you're not surrendering completely, what happens? Now here he talks about a religious or spiritual awakening, and I really like this, it's not complicated, it's the act. It's an action of giving up one's reliance on one's omnipotence, which is step 3. So the acceptance of a presence greater than yourself in your life is followed by a decision to give up your reliance on yourself and to rely on this power. So steps 2 and 3 follow right together. And what he's saying here is step 2 has to come before step 3. This true inner acceptance that God is going to be everything in my life, the presence of God is going to be absolutely everything in my life, comes before the decision to let that power direct me. But they come together. And unless you do step 2 completely and fully accept this, your step 3 decision won't be very powerful. Now, how do you know if you've done that? You're fighting step 4. You're screwing around. You don't want to do what they tell you. You don't want to, you're fighting it. When you're not fighting it, then you've truly accepted it and that you've made that decision. And I can't make people stop fighting it. I've tried to work with them. They usually get tired of me. And we can't make anybody do steps 2 and 3. It has to be done by them. And he says, the defined individual, which is us, when we come in here, no longer defies, but accepts, helps, guides, and control from the outside. Now, this is initially from the fellowship, then from a sponsor, then from reading the big book. than from people taking you through the steps. So God works through people. And you're accepting the help and guidance, and you say, yes, I want to do this. Sure, I'll follow through. How can I, what can I do next? You see, it's a whole change in attitude. And I love this. As the individual relinquishes, as he gives up his negative aggressive feelings. Anybody have negative aggressive feelings when they come in here? Towards himself, we have it towards himself and towards life and everybody in it. When you relinquish this, he finds himself overwhelmed by strongly positive ones, such as love, friendliness, peacefulness, and pervading contentment. And I think that's what the ninth step promises are really all about. Now, this card, a lot of people wonder, made fun of me when I was passing it out. They like to do that. But basically, this is this negative aggressive feelings. This is what it looks like. And when I work the steps with God through 6 and 7, I get the other, I get the opposite. And this is how we work this all the time. So we don't one day give up the negative aggressive feelings and then they're gone. We have to do it all day long. So how do you know when you need to give up your negative aggressive feelings? You don't feel good. You're angry, you're pissed off, you hate this one, they're not doing it right, blah, 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 blah. You're afraid. And then you have to stop and you have to relinquish it. See, I don't change it, I give it up. Relinquish is a powerful word. I relinquish it to the power, and the power takes it away. This is really good stuff. And then he says, when you have these positive feelings, that's the exact antithesis of the former restlessness and irritability. Remember, it says, doctor's opinion, why do we drink? We're irritable, restless, and discontented. What that means is you can't live sober. You're with your feelings. You can't live sober in the world. So you seek alcohol as a treatment for that. How did that work? Not very well. So now we're going to seek God. And to do that, the first thing we have to do is to fully, completely accept the presence of that power inside of me, available to me, and then make a decision to let that power work in my life. He says, all members of Alcoholics Anonymous who succeed in remaining dry sooner or later undergo the same change in personality. Here he means dry, when he wrote this, we're talking about emotional sobriety. Sober with a change in your personality. And here's a warning. They must lose the narcissistic element permanently. Otherwise, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works only temporarily. Now, how do I lose the narcissistic element permanently? God can and will if he is sought. Am I a God seeker today? Am I seeking God in all things? Am I first seeking the kingdom of heaven? Is God constantly in my thoughts torn to God and his vision of me and what he's to do for me? Now, it doesn't mean you do it perfectly, but that's your goal every morning. What's your first instruction when you wake up in the morning from the big book? You're to think of your plans for the day. And then it says, stop, you idiot. It doesn't really say that. But it says before you begin, you may ask God to direct your thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. My motives have to be changed away from me towards God. He says, regardless of your final conception of your power, unless the individual attains in the course of time a sense of the reality and nearness of his greater power, his egocentric nature will reassert itself with undiminished intensity, and drinking will again enter into the picture. So there's a warning on page 85. It says we're never cured of alcoholism. We have a daily reprieve. Why? How? Based upon maintaining a fit spiritual condition, which means that your narcissistic, egocentric nature is not being reasserted. Now on page 25, there are two great facts in here that talk about this. And there's a solution. It says there's a solution. And then it says, the great fact in the second paragraph is this and just nothing less. We've had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized my whole attitude towards life, toward my fellows, and towards God's universe. That's the great fact. Now here's the central fact, and this is what he's talking about. The central fact of my life today is the absolute certainty that my Creator has entered into my heart and life in a way which is indeed miraculous. I'm certain of that. Josiah said it beautifully. God is doing for him what he cannot do for himself. And when you have that central fact in your life, then your egocentric nature won't reassert itself. Get it? So then he's going to paraphrase what Dr. Thibault said. If we don't truly accept step two, truly accept it, the presence that God is everything in my deepest inner structure, I can't sustain the inner feeling of acceptance and remain sober. So step two is a continuous thing that you do all the time, and you do that because you do step one all the time, right? You have to constantly be reminded that your power is over alcohol and your power is over running your life. It says, I must give up reliance on one's omnipotence through step three. So that's where I'm giving up and I'm making a decision. And it says to accept help, guidance, and control from the outside. We have to lose the narcissistic element permanently. Otherwise, the program works only temporarily. Now, you see that a lot with new people. They come in, their lives are an effing mess. They're really willing. They're 100% gung-ho. They call you every day. They start reading. They follow instructions. And then all of a sudden, it starts to balk a little. And then before you know it, they don't call you, and they're not here anymore. Now, I don't know that that's good or bad for them, but it's usually not good. Because the egocentric nature reasserts itself. I'm always worried when people celebrate 3 months and they tell me how great everything is and life's perfect and the promises are great and this and that. It's just the beginning. It doesn't mean that that's not true. But unless followed through with continuous action, that egocentric nature is going to reassert itself with undiminished intensity. And it can reassert itself at 18 years, 20 years, 25. We're never immune for that. Now, some people may not drink when their egocentric nature reasserts themselves, but they're going to be effing miserable to themselves and everybody else. So what we want is emotional sobriety. So here's the original question they asked last week. Why is life outside of AA such a mess? They're talking about somebody comes to AA, they've quit drinking, everything's great at the meetings, but nothing's really changed. He says, because the alcoholic ego has rebuilt itself. And remember, we only conceded our drinking, we only conceded that in our mind. We haven't conceded the everything that the second step requires to enter most self. And I think this is really powerful because we don't talk about step two enough. We have to concede everything. Complete surrender comes before the decision to seek God. So really, I've talked about step three, maybe the surrender step, but I think step two is really the surrender step. Surrender to accept the presence of a power greater than yourself. So it says, we haven't conceded that our life outside of AA is unmanageable. We haven't admitted defeat or conceded to our powerlessness in running the rest of our life. And that's why I said step two comes before step three. So he says, if our choice in the second step proposition, I quoted that line, page 53, second paragraph is where it is. You don't have to look it up now. Is God everything or nothing? Who wants God to be everything? Anybody? Everybody? No, sure. Then guess what? I have to give him everything. I can't hold anything back. I can't give God 95% of my life. The 5% will kill me. I can't give him 99.5. The 0.5% will kill me. And he says, we can't just give him the drinking aspects of our life. We must give God complete control of our entire life through a concession at the deepest level to our innermost selves. And what he's talking about is that decision to do this. Then how you follow through in that decision, you do your steps 4 through 9 and you live in step 10. And step 10 is how you follow through and making God everything all the time when he's not. Now, I had no idea how to do this until I worked the steps, until I studied the big book. I went to a lot of meetings before I finally was exposed to the big book. and actually followed the directions and studied and have worked these steps. Till I did that, my life was better, but it wasn't anything compared to what it's like now. Because I can't, with my mind, concede. I can't, with my mind, think it through. It has to be in here. It has to be a complete surrender. And let's not forget that the third step is where we offer ourselves to God. Is that a good idea? Mm-hmm. And remember the prayer said, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Has anybody ever said that prayer? Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't say, build with me and do with me as thou wilt, except there's no exceptions. Now, Charlie makes the point, he didn't want to do that because he was afraid that God would make him a missionary. So the guy says, listen, if you do this step, you won't have an idiot running your life anymore. And it's true. That means God is running the show, the whole show. Now, here's the thing that's so sad, is God was writing the whole show the whole time anyway. Mm-hmm. But I was under the delusion, and Ed's shaking his head, he knows what I'm talking about. I was under the delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of managing well. That's page 61. That delusion killed me. It put me in a universe where I was the center. Now here's a good one. We don't get a vote. I don't get the vote on what the show looks like. As Don P. says, your life is none of your damn business. Mm-hmm. And what did Chuck C. says, it's my business to do God's business, and it's God's business to take care of me. Think about that. And we say on page 63 that after we've made that decision, that we have a new employer, remember? And he's all powerful, and he will provide everything I need if I stay close to him and do his work well. See how it's all tied together? It's a very simple program. We make it very complicated. Now, the third step says, made a decision to turn my will, what I want, and my life, everything about my life and actions over to the care of God. Now, remember, I'm giving my car to God's care, but it's still my car. So I'm giving my life and my will to God, but it's still, I can take it away from God. Does that make sense? You can take your car to the dealer and you can drive it out if you don't like what he's doing. It's the care of God. God's not going to permanently do anything. We have to allow him to do it. Does that make sense? From this point on, and I really like this, what I want does not matter. And we had a member who used to come to this meeting every Wednesday night. Unfortunately, he died young of a complication of an illness that had nothing to do with his disease. But he used to say, what I want doesn't matter. It's what God wants that matters. That's why my sponsor made me write, what I want does not matter, all over the place. I could see it all day, every day. And, you know, I may need to start writing that a little bit, too. We all need to. What I want doesn't matter. And it's what God wants for me that matters, and for me to carry it out. Isn't that what step 11 is? Knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry it out. Step 85 says, what must we carry every day into all of activities? A vision of God's will for me. His will, not mine, be done. Okay, so now you say, we know what the problem is. What do I have to do? Well, isn't that the key? Because it's one thing to intellectualize this and for me to talk about, but how do we actually do it? And that's what this exercise is all about. Now, here he talks about how he does his set-aside prayer. And he prays and meditates because he sees that my own prejudice is one of my greatest roadblocks to true progress, and it's true for me even today. Prejudgment, what I think I know. And I have to open my mind all the time to see things differently. Now, one of the joys of doing these meetings for me is as I prepare for each meeting, even though I've done them a million times, I see something new. I say the set-aside prayer, and as I went through this handout, I saw new things today. More is always revealed if we're willing and we're open-minded. Therefore, he does his step work, keeping in mind his powerlessness is step one. I always seek power through prayer and meditation. And here's his set-aside prayer. I have my own version. God, I ask you to be with me, to guide and direct me as I seek your truth. Father, please set aside within me that which would block me off from the truth. Lay aside my prejudices about what I think I know about this process, this exercise of my spiritual condition. Remove my fears about what I might find out about myself, Lord, and help me realize your truth. That would not be a bad prayer to say every morning. Say every morning and every evening and before you do any step work, and maybe during the day if you're getting blocked. Why? Because you're asking God really to unblock you. To begin an exercise, all you need is a piece of paper. This is a really complicated thing. And you draw a line down the middle. And you can use any ink you want, any paper, any color paper. So that's columns 1 and 2. Get it? 1 and 2. I know it's Alcoholics Anonymous, so I have to make it clear. Column down the middle, 1 and 2. And then that becomes the first two columns. On top of column 1, I write, what areas of my life have I not given or I'm not willing to give to God? Now, I've done this exercise, and I've had people who have done the cards. They're just going to show you how to do a little 3x5 card and carry them around, and it really works. I've been doing it so long that I automatically know when I'm blocked. I already know when I'm in fear, when I'm taking control, and I have to stop right away. And if I don't, then I call Mark or somebody, or my wife tells me. And it's easy to let go because I don't want to be blocked. And I'm the one who causes it. And that's step 10. I've done several talks on step 10. Page 84 and 85 have the specific directions on how you do it all day long. So he talks about the tornado exercise to help you find out which areas of your life you're not giving to God. Now the tornado exercise is from page 82. And on page 82, I'll just read it. This is in the amends part of the book, step 9. Now, this may not have been true. You may not have thought this true when you came in. But once you're here, wow, this is so true when I look back on my life. I was a tornado roaring my way through the lives of others. Hearts were broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. A lot of people come in, they say, I'm sober 30 days, and she's still mad at me. Well, hello. You know, look at what your life was like. He is like the farmer who came up out of a cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing? We just don't see it. So he says, here, you can use this as a way of... So if I'm the tornado, who gets affected first? Now, he does two things with this exercise. One, he looks at relationships and people, and then he looks at areas of your life that you haven't given to God. And the person is close to me is my spouse. Then mentally, I start spiraling out through my life. Who gets hit next? My kids, and next my siblings, parents, friends, coworkers, church members, neighbors, etc. Now, that's why you do this exercise after you've done your resentment exercise, because you've listed all the people you had resentment against. You've learned how to forgive and see them differently and be free from anger towards them. And then you've looked at your mistakes in column 4. So you know who you're going to start with is the people who are in your resentment list. And I wrote, and see who we are trying to control. And here's a good one I saw today, or who's controlling us. Who's controlling you, or who are you controlling? And then you list that out. And they will help you identify your problem areas of control. Have I given each of these relationships and the outcome over to God? Am I still trying to control these relationships? When I think of these people, does the hair on the back of my neck stand up, or am I at peace? Do these people bother me, or are they a burden to me? And lastly, I ask these questions. And so I'm just going to read this and we'll pick this up next week. We're going to look at the areas of our life in which you've been unhappy, angry, frustrated, and they can be different each week. And you can be sober 15 years and have different areas. It can be this area this week and that area next week. And you're going to learn this exercise, how you do these three questions and you say the prayer, and we'll go through it next week. And whenever you're disturbed with fear, you can get undisturbed very quickly and get back to God. So I hope this was helpful. I went a little bit too long, I guess, but you'll forgive me. It's good to be back. I actually sat the whole time and not jumping around like a lunatic. For those who are on the podcast that had knee replacement, it's hard to sit still, but it's getting better. Thanks, everybody.